Here's a question often posed to non-believers. What would convince you of God's existence, specifically the Christian God? What would change your mind and convince you to convert? One answer I've heard, I don't know, but God would know. The fact that he hasn't most likely means that he doesn't have the motivation, since he has the knowledge of what would convince me and the power to do so. Or maybe he hasn't because he doesn't exist. And by the way, if it's not obvious, I'm getting over a cold, so I apologize if my voice sounds a little funny. So it's obviously true that God would know how to convince you of his existence. And since we're often told that God is a perfectly loving being who longs for a relationship with us, the issue of why there are any non-believers who don't have any resistance to being in a relationship with God is a serious question. In fact, there are non-believers who don't just lack any desire to not be in a relationship with God, but they want theism to be true. They want to be in a relationship with God, but God remains silent and distant. They seek but don't find. Many of the faithful report experiences like this, not just atheists and agnostics. Everyone from C.S. Lewis to Mother Teresa lamented the silence and distance and hiddenness of God. Further, there are believers who seek and think they find, but they worship a false god. In short, if God exists, it doesn't seem like he's trying very hard to get humanity in a conscious, personal relationship with him. It must not be that high on his list of priorities. And for the record, that's not a totally facetious answer. It's possible that God exists, and there is just not much at stake in the issue of believing that God exists. But I'm not trying to change the subject, and I don't want to give a cop-out answer to the question of what would convince me. The "I don't know, but God would know" response does feel like a cop-out. So, fill in the blank. I would convert if... What would convince you? First, I want to say that it would be a lot easier to believe if the world looked very different, if I couldn't make arguments from evil, especially evolutionary animal suffering. It'd be a lot easier to believe. And there are other obstacles as well, but I just wanted to plant a flag and say that the evidential situation is not optimal for theism. Hopefully we can all agree on that much. God could be doing a lot more to make his existence known. That much is obvious, and everyone should be able to admit it. But, again, not trying to give a cop-out. Given our lamentable epistemic situation, what would convince me from here? Well, I basically have three answers, and I've noticed that many apologists really hate one of them in particular. First, my personal favorite, and this is not the one apologists hate, aliens. Yes, aliens. Specifically, Christian aliens. If Christianity, or something like it, arose independently on another planet, I am converting to Christianity. It would be possible to explain it in naturalistic terms. I can think of a few non-theistic accounts off the top of my head, ranging from reductionist evo-psych explanations to spooky explanations invoking the Jungian collective unconscious. But come on, if we can confirm that Christianity arose independently on another planet, that would be spectacular evidence for Christianity. Just like religious discord is evidence against particular religions, religious harmony is evidence for that religion. Chemists across different cultures get the same answer to questions about chemistry. If theologians, separated in the way that aliens would be separated from humanity, got the same answer to questions about theology, that would be great evidence that they're actually studying something objectively real. I mean, Christian aliens, if you don't convert at that point, how are you not a resistant non-believer? So, I like this response because it goes out on a predictive limb. This is something that could actually happen. I think the universe is just too vast for earthly life to be the only complex life out there. Further, I think the standard skeptical responses to UFO-UAP research are just terrible. Jimmy Akin and I responded to 10 of the most common skeptical talking points on both of our channels. I also talked about religion and aliens a bit in a recent AMA, if you want to hear more about how I think the existence of aliens would impact the probability of theism. But for now, I'll leave it at that. Christian aliens would definitely convince me. Depending on the details, miracles would also change my mind. What are those details? Well, I discussed it at length here in a panel discussion on the argument for miracles. I also like how Counter-Apologist lays it out in his video here, in the section on Catholic Mass, and C.M. Lorkowski, in an interview with Relay Theology, explains the section of his book, Atheism Considered, that elaborates the criteria for when a miracle becomes the best explanation of a particular event. You can find the links for these in the show notes. So I reference these other videos because if I were to summarize the criteria, I'd have to paper over all kinds of nuances and issue a million caveats, so I'm just going to link to other discussions where those nuances have been addressed. I just wanted to establish that I'm not the kind of non-believer who couldn't be convinced by miracles in principle for whatever reason. There are certain conditions under which I'd change my mind in response to a miracle. And finally, religious experience. So this is the response that I've noticed some apologists really hate. At first, I was surprised by their reaction. Why would they be upset when I give a definite answer to something that would convince me? Especially something that God is apparently willing to do for many people. What I've discovered is that a lot of theists don't like it when you say that you'd convert after having a religious experience, because it implies that God is at least partially culpable for your non-belief. I don't know if it feels somehow sacrilegious to blame God for, well, anything, or if it just causes cognitive dissonance when they realize that there really are non-resistant non-believers out there, but I've seen it put like this. You're just taking the pressure off yourself and putting it on God. That way, you can just sit back and say, convince me, God, the ball is in your court. First of all, I'm giving specific examples of what would in fact convert me, and you're still not happy, which is very lame and annoying. Even though what they're saying is not the most charitable way to put it, yes, God is clearly not doing as much as he could to convince me and other non-believers. Is this supposed to be a one-sided relationship? One issue is that I would want a genuine belief in God. I would want confidence in my belief. And if I really try to convince myself that God exists, without God doing much of anything, how can I be sure that I didn't just play on my own cognitive biases and work myself up into believing? But if it's a more passive process, or at least not a totally one-sided process, then I can have more assurance in my belief. What happened to the shepherd coming after the one lost sheep? The last thing these apologists want to accept is the idea that God has any responsibility whatsoever for failing to provide something we need, especially when the stakes in the minds of many believers are so incredibly high. The really annoying thing is that some Christians say that faith is a gift. It's a supernatural gift that one can't simply arrive at on one's own. Well, in that case, this is a gift many of us have not received. I think the fact that God, if he exists, has effectively abandoned so many people is too incongruent with their image of who God is supposed to be. Apparently, the most he's willing to do is put some complicated arguments in front of me that I'm barely smart enough to understand that vaguely point at something. It's not clear. There's no gift of faith. There's no unambiguous experience. There's just silence. I'm not closed off to an experience. In many ways, things would be better for me if I were a Christian. I've never stopped investigating the question, and there's more I could be doing. There will always be more. But it doesn't matter how much you do, because certain Christians will always find a way to blame you if you're a non-believer. It sort of reminds me of the people who say there are no atheists. You're either deceiving them or you're self-deceived. Maybe it comes to mind because the defensiveness is kind of the same. It feels almost like a reflex on their part, and there seems to be some kind of implicit or explicit accusation of bad faith. And some believers are not like this. They pray that we do have an experience. For the others, I think their extreme defensiveness is a bit of a tell. As non-believers, I don't think we should take it personally. It seems to boil down to, well, if what these atheists and agnostics are saying is correct, then it's kind of God's fault that they don't believe. But that can't be the case. So there must be something wrong with their answer. Because you just don't fit with their worldview. Scott Clifton pointed this out on Twitter. Someone named Dorothy said to him, God doesn't believe in atheists or agnostics. The only reason humans resist the idea of God is because they know he exists and do not want lordship over their lives. And Scott said, from an apologetics perspective, this is a tactically mystifying move. I have direct, immediate access to my own propositional attitudes. Dorothy doesn't. If Christianity as a set of claims about the world includes this one, and this one is false, then Dorothy has just proven to the atheist once and for all that Christianity is false. Quite the gamble. And speaking of great atheist channels, the Non-Alchemist has pointed out many times that the idea that you'd believe on the basis of testimony that someone rose from the dead, but not believe in non-resistant non-believers on the basis of testimony, which happens to come in a much greater volume and not like third hand, is just obviously inconsistent. Not that apologists ever take my advice, but maybe if atheists and agnostics are telling you, hey, if I had a religious experience, I would believe in God, maybe you should just pray that they do have a religious experience, instead of saying, oh, I don't like this answer because it kind of messes with my idea of God. So out of pure defensiveness, I'm going to say that you're being deceptive, you're either lying to me or self-deceived, or this is just kind of a philosophically shady move to take the pressure off of yourself. Yeah, or maybe we're telling the truth. Now, not every atheist would give this answer that religious experiences would convince them. I totally acknowledge that a religious experience would be wasted on certain people. They actually wouldn't be convinced. But that's not me. I would be convinced. It would not be wasted on me. So I just feel the need to issue that caveat. I'm not saying that all atheists are non-resistant non-believers, or that a religious experience would convince anybody. So that brings me to this next point. I need to turn to another group for a moment. Atheists who think that religious experiences are epistemically worthless, or close to it. I think they're mistaken. To fully explain why would require diving into epistemological waters explored in other videos, specifically 5 mistakes atheists make about epistemology, 4 things I learned about epistemology, in particular the section on internalism versus externalism, and my conversation with Michael Humer where we defend phenomenal conservatism. For now, let me just say that I think those who experience God are rational in believing in Him. In the ordinary experiential states of seeing, feeling, hearing, etc., we naturally form beliefs about the external world and about other minds. There's no reason God couldn't be one of these other minds. If it seems to you that you're seeing an object or interacting with a conscious person, then as far as I'm concerned, in the absence of any defeaters, any specific grounds for doubting your experiences, you have some justification for believing that there really is an object, person, etc. The appropriate default state is to trust your faculties. You should trust your visual experiences unless you have a specific reason for doubting your visual experiences. That makes sense, right? You should also trust your memory experiences unless you have a specific reason for doubting them, and so on. We occupy different positions on the grand epistemic landscape as a consequence of our different experiences, intuitions, books we've read, podcasts we've listened to, and even the order in which we've consumed those things. This is something I've covered in many other episodes. Joe Schmid from Majesty of Reason was the first to make the point vivid for me. So whether or not it's true is a much harder question, but rationality actually comes pretty cheap. Me saying that it's rational for you to believe in God on the basis of a religious experience is perhaps not saying as much as you might think if you have a completely different understanding of rationality. So, drawing from Joe and from what I've read of Michael Humer on epistemology, I think rationality, justification, etc., is subject-dependent. So, this is an example from Alvin Plantinga. Imagine you're accused of a crime on the basis of physical evidence, but you know that you didn't do it on the basis of your memory. You remember what you were doing that day, you have no memory of committing this crime. So for you, the immediate evidence of your memory is more than enough, and it's not defeated by the public evidence against you. That won't do much to convince others who don't have access to your mind in the same way that you do. So even though the publicly available evidence is the same for everyone, including you, the jury may be rational in believing that you did commit the crime, and you may be rational in believing that you didn't do it. Again, rationality comes pretty cheap. Regardless of what turns out to be true, it can be rational for different people to come to different conclusions on the basis of their experiences. The case where you have your memory experiences and the jury doesn't is a perfect example of rational agents occupying different positions on the epistemic landscape. No one involved is necessarily violating any standards of rationality, and yet they've come to different conclusions. Of course, contrary evidence may be strong enough to persuade you that your experiences have misled you. But that would require some pretty strong contrary evidence. Even though atheists can provide a good case for their position, unless it meets a very high bar, it just won't do much to persuade those who have had the experience of God. Nor should it. In The Varieties of Religious Experience, William James exposes an epistemic double standard held among many skeptics. Quote, "Mystical states, when well developed, usually are and have the right to be absolutely authoritative over the individuals to whom they come. Our own, more rational beliefs are based on evidence exactly similar in nature to that which mystics quote for theirs. Our senses, namely, have assured us of certain states of fact. But mystical experiences are as direct perceptions of fact for those who have had them as any sensations ever were for us. The existence of mystical states absolutely overthrows the pretension of non-mystical states to be the sole and ultimate dictators of what we may believe. It is the rationalistic critic, rather, who plays the part of denier in the controversy, and his denials have no strength, for there never can be a state of facts to which new meaning may not truthfully be added, provided the mind ascend to a more enveloping point of view. It must always remain an open question whether mystical states may not possibly be such superior points of view, windows through which the mind looks out upon a more extensive and inclusive world. The difference of the views seen from the different mystical windows need not prevent us from entertaining this supposition. The wider world would, in that case, prove to have a mixed constitution like that of this world. That is all. So if I have an experience of God, I won't be ignoring it. It would convince me. Sorry, apologists. As for other things that would convince me, there may be some wonderful argument that I just haven't thought about yet that completely persuades me, or maybe seeing an old argument in a new light. I think I've proven over the years that I'm capable of changing my mind and going where I think the evidence is leading me. But until then, I'm really rooting for the Christian aliens. Thank you for listening. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll see you next time.